Side 5. Fantastic Voyage by Isaac Asimov. Continuing on page 204. But that's not all, is it? You're here to keep an eye on Dr. Duval, aren't you?
Why do you say that?
Because it's true. The higher echelons at the CMDF don't trust Dr. Duval. They never have.
Why is that?
Because he is a dedicated man, completely innocent and completely involved. He offends others not because he wants to, but because he honestly doesn't know he's offensive. He doesn't know that anything exists beside his work.
Not even beautiful assistants?
Cora flushed. I suppose not even assistants. But he values my work. He really does.
He'd keep right on valuing your work, wouldn't he, if someone else valued you?
Cora looked away, then went on firmly. But he's not disloyal. One trouble is he favors free exchange of information with the other side and says so because he doesn't know how to keep his views unobtrusive. Then when others disagree with him, he tells them how foolish he thinks they are.
Grant nodded. Yes, I can imagine. And that makes everybody love him because people just adore being told how foolish they are.
Well, that's the way he is.
Look, don't sit there and worry. I don't mistrust Duval any more than I do anyone else.
Michaels does.
I know that. Michaels has moments where he mistrusts everyone, both in this ship and outside. He even mistrusts me. But I assure you, I give that only the weight I think it deserves.
Cora looked anxious. You mean Michaels thinks I deliberately damaged the laser? That Dr. Duval and I, together...
I think he thinks of that as a possibility.
And you, Grant?
I think of it as a possibility, too.
But do you believe it?
It is a possibility, Cora, among many possibilities. Some possibilities are better than others. Let me worry about that end of it, dear. Before she could answer, both heard Duval's voice raised in anger.
No, no, no. It's out of the question, Michaels. I won't have a jackass tell me what to do.
Jackass? Shall I tell you what you are, you son...
Grant was out front, Cora directly behind him.
Grant said, hold it, both of you. What's up?
Duval turned and said, fuming, I have the laser back in order. The wire is shaved to the proper size, it's joined to the transistor, and it's back in place. I've just told that to this jackass here. He turned his face toward Michaels and clipped out, Jackass, I said. Then went on, because he asked me about it.
Well, good, said Grant. What's wrong with that?
Michaels said heatedly,
because that son of a bitch saying so doesn't make it so. He's put some things together. I can do that much. Anyone can. How does he know it will work?
Because I know. I've worked with lasers for 12 years. I know when they work.
Well, then, show us, Doctor. Let us share your knowledge. Use it.
No. Either it works or it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, I can't fix it under any circumstances because I've done all I can and nothing further can be done. That means we'll be no worse off if I wait till we get to the clot to find out that it doesn't work. But if it works, and it will work, it remains jerry-rigged. I don't know how long it will last. A dozen blasts or so at most. I want to save every one of those blasts for the clot. I won't waste a single one of them here. I won't have the mission fail because I tested the laser even once.
I tell you, you've got to test the laser, said Michaels. If you don't, then I swear, Duval, that when we get back, I will have you thrown out of the CMDF so far and have you broken into so many small pieces. I'll worry about that when we get back. Meanwhile, this is my laser, and I do as I please with it. You can't order me to do anything I don't wish to do, and neither can Grant.
Grant shook his head. I'm not ordering you to do anything, Dr. Duval.
Duval nodded briefly and turned away. Michaels looked after him.
I'll get him.
He makes sense in this case, Michaels, said Grant. Are you sure you're not annoyed with him for personal reasons?
Because he calls me coward and jackass? Am I supposed to love him for that? But whether I have personal animosity against him or not doesn't matter. I think he's a traitor.
Cora said angrily, That's quite untrue.
I doubt, said Michaels freezingly, that you're a reliable witness in this case.
But never mind. We're getting to the clot, and we'll see about Duval then.
He'll clear that clot, said Cora, if the laser works.
If it works, said Michaels.
And if it does, I wouldn't be surprised if he kills Benish. And not by accident.
Carter had his jacket off and his sleeves rolled up. He was slumped in his chair on the base of his spine, and a second cigar, freshly lit, was in his mouth. He wasn't puffing.
In the brain? He said.
Reed's mustache seemed bedraggled at last. He rubbed his eyes.
Practically at the clot. They've stopped.
Carter looked at the time recorder, which read 9. He felt used up, out of juice, out of adrenaline, out of tension, out of life. He said,
Think they'll make it?
Reed shook his head. No, I don't.
In 9 minutes, maybe 10, the men, ship and all, would be standing full size before them, exploding Benish's body if they hadn't gotten out in time. Carter thought of what the newspapers would make of CMDF if this project failed. He heard the speeches from every politician in the land and from those on the other side. How far would CMDF be set back? How many months, years, would it take it to recover? Wearily, he began to write his letter of resignation in his mind.
We've entered the brain itself, announced Owens with controlled excitement. He doused the ship's lights again, and all of them looked forward in a moment of wonder that put everything else, even the climax of the mission, out of their minds for a moment.
Duval murmured, How wonderful. The supreme peak of creation. Grant, for the moment, felt that. Surely the human brain was the most intensely complicated object crowded into the smallest possible volume in all the universe. There was a silence about their surroundings. The cells they could see were jagged, uneven, with fibrous dendrites jutting out here and there, like a bramble bush. As they drifted through the interstitial fluid along passageways between the cells, they could see the dendrites tangling overhead, and for a moment they were passing under what seemed the twisted limbs of a row of ancient forest trees. Duval said,
See, they don't touch. You can see the synapses clearly. Always that gap which must be jumped across chemically.
Cora said, They seem to be full of lights.
Michael said, an edge of anger still in his voice,
A mere illusion. The reflection of miniaturized light plays tricks. It bears no relation to reality.
How do you know? Demanded Duval at once. This is an important field for study. The reflection of miniaturized light is bound to vary subtly with the structure of the molecular contents of the cell. This sort of reflection, I predict, will become a more powerful instrument for studying the micro details of the cell than any now existing. It may well be that the techniques arising out of this mission of ours will be far more important than what happens to Benish.
Is that how you're excusing yourself, Doctor? Asked Michaels.
Duval reddened.
Explain that.
Not now, said Grant imperiously. Not one more word, gentlemen. Duval drew a deep breath and turned back to the window.
Cora said, But anyway, do you see the lights? Watch up above. Watch that dendrite as it comes close.
I see it, said Grant.
The usual glittering reflections did not, as had been generally true elsewhere in the body, sparkle from this point and that randomly, making the whole look like a dense cloud of fireflies. Instead, the sparkle chased itself along the dendrite, a new one beginning before the old one had completed its path.
Owen said, You know what it looks like? Anyone ever see films of old-fashioned advertising signs with electric lights, with waves of light and dark moving along?
Yes, said Cora. That's exactly what it's like.
But why?
Duval said, A wave of depolarization sweeps along a nerve fiber when it is stimulated. The ion concentrations change. Sodium ion enters the cell. This changes the charge intensity inside and out and lowers the electric potential. Somehow that must affect the reflection of miniaturized light, which is exactly the point I was making. And what we see is the wave of depolarization.
Now that Cora had pointed out the fact, or perhaps because they were moving ever deeper into the brain, the moving wave of sparkles could be seen everywhere, moving along the cells, climbing and descending fibers, twisting into an unimaginably complex system which seemed at first glance without any form of order, and yet which gave the sense of order anyway.
What we see, said Duval, is the essence of humanity. The cells are the physical brain, but those moving sparkles represent thought, the human mind.
Is that the essence? Said Michaels harshly. I would have thought it was the soul. Where is the human soul, Duval?
Because I can't point it out, do you think it doesn't exist? Demanded Duval. Where is Benish's genius? You are in his brain. Point to his genius.
Enough, said Grant.
Michaels called up to Owens.
We're almost there. Cross over into the capillary at the indicated point. Just push through.
Duval said thoughtfully, That's the awesome thing of it. We're not just in the mind of a man. This, all about us, is the mind of a scientific genius, someone I would put almost on a par with Newton.
He was silent for a moment, and then quoted, Where the statue stood of Newton with his prism and silent face, the marble index of a mind.
Grant cut in with an awed whisper,
Forever voyaging through strange seas of thought, alone.
Again a short silence, and Grant said,
Do you think Wordsworth ever thought of this, or could have, when he spoke of strange seas of thought? This is the literal sea of thought, isn't it? And strange it is, too.
Cora said, I didn't think of you as the poetic type, Grant.
Grant nodded. All muscle, no mind. That's me.
Don't be offended.
Michael said, When you are done with mumbling poetry, gentlemen, look ahead.
He pointed. They were in the bloodstream again, but the red corpuscles, bluish in color, drifted without any definite motion, shuddering slightly in response to Brownian motion. No more. Up ahead was a shadow. A forest of dendrites could be seen through the transparent walls of the capillary, each strand, each twig with its line of sparkle moving along itself, but more slowly now, and still more slowly. And after a certain point, there were no more sparkles. The Proteus came to a halt. For an instant or two, there was silence. Then Owens said quietly, That's our destination, I think.
Duval nodded.
Yes, the clot.
Chapter 17. Clot.
Duval said, Notice how the nerve action ends at the clot? That's visible evidence of nerve damage, possibly irreversible. I wouldn't swear that we can help Benish now, even if we remove the clot.
Good thinking, Doctor, said Michaels sarcastically. That excuses you, doesn't it?
Shut up, Michaels, said Grant coldly.
Duval said, On with a swimsuit, Miss Peterson. This has got to be done right now, and put it on inside out. The antibodies are sensitized to its normal surface, and there may be some about.
Michaels smiled wearily. Don't trouble yourselves. It's too late.
He pointed to the time recorder, which was just making the slow change from 7 to 6. He said, You couldn't possibly perform the operation in time to allow us to get to the removal point in the jugular. Even if you succeed in the removal of the clot, we'll end by deminiaturizing right here and killing Benish.
Duval did not stop in his donning of the suit, nor did Cora.
Duval said, Well, then, he'll be no worse off than he will be if we don't operate.
No, but we will. We'll get larger slowly at first. It may take us a whole minute to reach a size that will attract the attention of a white blood cell. There are millions of them around the site of the injury. We'll be engulfed.
So?
I doubt that either the Proteus or we could withstand the physical strain placed upon us by the compression within a digestive vacuole inside a white cell. Not in our miniaturized state, and not after all the ship and we have already gone through. We'll continue expanding, but when we are back to full size, it will be as a crushed ship and crushed human beings. You had better leave here, Owens, and make it as quickly as you can for the removal point.
Hold it, interposed Grant angrily. Owens, how long will it take us to removal point?
Owens said faintly,
2 minutes.
That leaves us 4 minutes. Maybe more. Isn't it true that deminiaturization after 60 minutes is a conservative estimate?
Couldn't we remain miniaturized for longer if the field holds a little longer than expected?
Maybe, said Michaels flatly, but don't kid yourself. A minute longer, 2 minutes at the outside. We can't beat the uncertainty principle.
All right, 2 minutes. And mightn't it take longer to deminiaturize than we're counting on? Duval said, It might take a minute or two if we're lucky.
Owens put in, It's because of the random nature of the basic structure of the universe. With luck, if everything breaks our way.
But only a minute or two, said Michaels, at most.
All right, said Grant. We've got 4 minutes, plus maybe 2 minutes extra, plus maybe a minute of slow deminiaturization before we do damage to Benish. That's 7 minutes of our long, time-distorted variety. Get going, Duval.
All you'll succeed in doing, you damned fool, is to get Benish killed and us with him, yelled Michaels. Owens, get us over to removal point.
Owens hesitated. Grant moved quickly to the ladder and climbed up to Owens' bubble. He said quietly, Turn off the power, Owens. Turn it off. Owens' finger moved to a switch, hovered over it. Grant's hand moved quickly to it and flicked it into the off position with a strenuous gesture. Now get down. Come on down. He half pulled Owens out of a seat and both came down. The hole had taken a few seconds and Michaels had watched, open-mouthed, too startled to move.
What the devil have you done?
He demanded. The ship is staying right here, said Grant, till the operation has succeeded. Now, Duval, get on with it. Duval said, Get the laser, Miss Peterson. Both were in their swimsuits now. Cora's looked sadly seamed and lumpy. She said, I must be a rare sight.
Michael said, Are you mad? All of you? There is no time. All this is suicide. Listen to me.
He was almost frothing with anxiety.
You can't accomplish anything.
Grant said, Owens, operate the hatch for them.
Michaels flung himself forward, but Grant seized him, whirled him around, and said,
Don't make me hit you, Dr. Michaels. My muscles ache, and I don't want to have to use them, but if I hit, I will hit hard, and I promise you I will break your jaw. Michaels lifted his fists, almost as though he were ready to accept the challenge. But Duval and Cora had disappeared into the hatch, and Michaels, watching them leave, became almost pleading.
Listen, Grant, don't you see what's happening? Duval will kill Benish. It will be so easy. A slip of the laser, and who will tell the difference? If you do as I say, we can leave Benish alive, get out, and try again tomorrow.
He may not be alive tomorrow, and we can't miniaturize for quite a while, someone said.
He might be alive tomorrow. He'll certainly be dead if you don't stop Duval. Other people can be miniaturized tomorrow, even if we can't.
In another ship? Nothing but the Proteus can manage or is available. Michaels became shrill.
Grant, I tell you, Duval is an enemy agent.
I don't believe that, said Grant.
Why? Because he's so religious? Because he's so full of pious platitudes? Isn't that just the disguise he'd choose? Or have you been influenced by his mistress, his two-bit...
Grant said, don't finish that sentence, Michaels. Now listen, there's no evidence that he's an enemy agent, and there's no reason for me to believe that.
But I'm telling you...
I know you are. The fact is, though, I happen to believe that you are the enemy agent, Dr. Michaels.
I?
Yes. I have no real evidence for that either. Nothing that could hold up in a law court. But once security is through with you, such evidence will be found, I think. Michaels pushed away from Grant and stared at him with horror.
Of course. I see now. You are the agent, Grant. Owens, don't you see? There were a dozen times when we could have gotten out safely, when it was obvious that the mission couldn't succeed and wouldn't. He kept us in here every time. That's why he worked so hard replenishing our air supply at the lung. That's why... Help me, Owens. Help me.
Owens stood irresolute. Grant said, The time recorder is about to move to 5. We now have 3 minutes more. Give me 3 minutes, Owens. You know that Benish won't live unless we remove the clot in those 3 minutes. I'll go out and help them, and you keep Michaels immobilized. If I'm not back by the reading of 2, get out of here and save the ship and yourself. Benish will die, and maybe we will too. But you'll be safe, and you can put the finger on Michaels. Owens still said nothing. Grant said, 3 minutes, and he began putting on a suit. The time recorder said 5. Owens said, finally,
3 minutes, then. All right. But only 3 minutes.
Michael sat down wearily.
You're letting them kill Benish Owens. But I've done what I could. My conscience is clear.
Grant worked his way through the hatch. Duval and Cora swam quickly in the direction of the clot, he carrying the laser, she the power unit. Cora said,
I don't see any white cells, do you?
I'm not looking for them, said Duval brusquely.
He looked thoughtfully ahead. The beam of the ship's headlight and their own smaller ones were weakened by the tangle of fibers that seemed to encase the clot just on the other side of the point at which the nerve impulses appeared to stop. The wall of the arteriole had been abraded by the injury and was not entirely blocked by the clot, which embraced the section of nerve fibers and cells tightly.
If we can break up the clot and relieve the pressure without touching the nerve itself, muttered Duval, we will be doing well. If we leave only a basic scab to keep the arteriole plugged. Let's see now.
He maneuvered for position and raised the laser.
And if this thing works...
Cora said, Dr. Duval, remember you said that the most economical stroke would be from above.
I remember exactly, said Duval grimly, and I intend to hit it precisely.
He pressed the laser trigger. For the barest moment, a thin beam of coherent light flashed into being.
It works, cried Cora gladly.
This time, said Duval, but it will have to work a number of times.
For a moment, the clot had stood out in relief against the unbearable brilliance of the laser beam, and a line of small bubbles formed and marked out its path. Now the darkness was greater than before. Duval said, Close one eye, Miss Peterson, so that its retina will not require resensitization. Again the laser beam, and when it was over, Cora closed her open eye and opened the closed one. She said excitedly,
It's working, Dr. Duval. The glitter is progressing out of sight now. A whole dark area is lighting up.
Grant was swimming up to them. How's it coming, Duval?
Not bad, said Duval. If I can cut it through transversely now and relieve the pressure on one key spot, I think the entire nerve pathway will be freed.
He swam to one side. Grant called after him. We have less than 3 minutes.
Don't bother me, said Duval.
Cora said, It's all right, Grant. He'll do it. Did Michaels make trouble?
Some, said Grant grimly. Owens has him under guard.
Under guard?
Just in case.
Inside the Proteus, Owens cast quick glances outward.
I'll be damned if I know what to do, he muttered.
Just stand here and let the murderers work, said Michaels, sarcastically. You'll be held responsible for this, Owens.
Owens was silent. Michaels said,
You can't believe I'm an enemy agent.
Owens said, I'm not believing anything. Let's wait for the 2-minute mark, and if they're not back, we'll leave. What's wrong with that?
All right,
said Michaels. Owen said, The laser is working. I saw the flash.
And you know...
What?
The clot. I can see the sparkle of the nerve action in that direction where it couldn't be seen before.
I don't, said Michaels, peering outward.
I do, said Owens. I tell you, it's working. And they'll be back.
It looks as though you were wrong, Michaels.
Michaels shrugged.
All right, so much the better. If I'm wrong, and if Benish lives, I could ask for nothing more.
Only, his voice grew tightly alarmed.
Owens!
What?
There's something wrong with the escape hatch. That damned fool Grant must have been too excited to close it properly. Or was it excitement?
But what's wrong? I don't see anything.
Are you blind? It's seeping fluid. Look at the seam.
It's been wet here since Cora and Grant got away from the antibodies. Don't you remember?
Owens was staring down at the hatch, and Michael's hand, having closed around the screwdriver Grant had used to open the wireless panel, brought its handle down hard upon Owens' head. With a muffled exclamation, Owens dropped to his knees, dazed. Michael struck again in a fever of impatience and began jamming the limp figure into its swimsuit. Perspiration stood out on his bald head in great drops. Opening the escape hatch, he thrust Owens into it. Quickly, he let the hatch fill with water, then opened the outer door by the panel control, losing a precious moment searching for it. Ideally, he should now have flipped the ship to make certain that Owens had been thrown clear, but there was no time.
No time, he thought. No time.
Frantically, he leaped to the bubble and studied the controls. Something would have to be thrown to start the engine.
Ah, there.
A thrill of triumph surged through him as he felt the distant drumming of the engines begin again. He looked ahead toward the clot. Owens had been right. A glitter of light was racing down the length of a long nerve process, which until then had been dark. Duval was aiming the laser beam in short bursts at quick intervals. Grant said, I think we've just about had it, Doctor. Time's gone. I'm just about done. The clot has crumbled away. Just one portion. Ah! Mr. Grant, the operation has been a success. And we've got maybe 3 minutes to get out, maybe two. Back to the ship now. Carr said, someone else is here. Grant veered, lunged toward the aimlessly swimming figure. Michaels, he cried. Then, no, it's Owens. What? Owens said, I don't know. He hit me, I think. I don't know how I got out here. Where's Michaels? On the ship, I saw. Duval cried, the ship's motors have started.
What?
Said Owens, startled.
Who?
Michaels, said Grant. Obviously, he must be at the controls.
Why did you leave the ship, Grant?
Demanded Duval, angrily. That's what I'm asking myself now. I had hoped Owens...
I'm sorry, said Owens. I didn't think he was really an enemy agent. I couldn't tell...
Grant said, the trouble is I wasn't completely certain of it myself. Now, of course...
An enemy agent, said Cora with horror.
Michael's voice sounded,
all of you back off. In 2 minutes, the white cells will have come, and by that time I'll be on the way out. I'm sorry, but you had your chance to come out with me.
The ship was angling high now and making a large curve.
He's got it under full acceleration, said Owens.
And, said Grant, I think he's aiming at the nerve.
Exactly what I'm doing, Grant, came Michael's voice grimly. Rather dramatic, don't you think? First, I'll ruin the work of that mouthing Saint Duval, not so much for the sake of that alone as to do the kind of damage that will call a cohort of white cells to the scene at once. They'll take care of you.
Duval shouted,
listen, think. Why do this? Think of your country.
I'm thinking of mankind,
shouted back Michaels furiously.
The important thing is to keep the military out of the picture. Unlimited demilitarization in their hands will destroy the Earth. If you fools can't see that...
The Proteus was now diving directly for the just-relieved nerve process. Grant said desperately, the laser. Let me have the laser. He snatched the instrument from Duval, forcing it away. Where's the trigger? Never mind, I've got it. He angled upward, trying to intercept the hurtling ship.
Give me maximum power, he called to Cora. Full power.
He took careful aim, and a pencil-wide beam of light emerged from the laser and flickered out. Cora said,
the laser gave out, Grant.
Here, then, you hold it. I think I got the Proteus, though. It was hard to tell. In the general dimness, there was no way to see clearly.
You struck the rudder, I think,
said Owens.
You've killed my ship.
Behind his mask, his cheeks were suddenly wet.
Whatever you struck, said Duval, the ship doesn't seem to be handling very well.
The Proteus was shaking now, indeed, its headlight flashing up and down in a wide arc. The ship pulled downward, crashed through the arterial wall, missed the nerve by a hand's breadth, and lunged down into a forest of dendrites, catching and breaking free and catching again, until it lay there, a bubble of metal, entangled in thick, smooth fibers.
He missed the nerve, said Cora.
He did damage enough, growled Duval. That may start a new clot.
Or maybe not. I hope not. In any case, the white cells will be here. We had better leave.
Where?
Said Owens.
If we follow the optic nerve, we can make it to the eye in a minute or less. Follow me.
We can't leave the ship, said Grant. It will deminiaturize.
Well, we can't take it with us, said Duval. We have no choice but to try to save our own lives.
We can still do something, perhaps, insisted Grant. How much time do we have left? Duval said emphatically,
none. I think we're beginning to diminiaturize now. In a minute or so, we'll be large enough to attract the attention of a white cell.
Deminiaturizing? Now? I don't feel it.
You won't. But the surroundings are slightly smaller than they've been. Let's go.
Duval took a quick view around for orientation.
Follow me,
he said again, and began swimming away. Cora and Owens followed, and after a last moment of hesitation, Grant followed them. He had failed. In the last analysis, he had failed because, feeling not entirely convinced that Michaels was an enemy on the basis of some uncertain reasoning, he had vacillated. He would turn himself in, he thought bitterly, as a jackass unfit for his job.
But they're not moving, said Carter savagely. They stay there at the clot. Why? The time recorder read 1.
It's too late for them to get out now, said Reed. A message came through from the electroencephalographic unit. Sir, EEG data indicates Benish's brain action is being restored to normal.
Carter yelled, Then the operation is a success. Why are they staying behind?
We have no way of knowing. The time recorder moved to 0, and a loud alarm went off. Its shrill jangle filled the entire room with a clang of doom. Reed raised his voice to be heard. We've got to take them out.
It will kill Benish.
If we don't take them out, that will kill Benish, too. Carter said,
If there's anyone outside the ship, we won't be able to get him out.
Reed shrugged. We can't help that. The white cells may get them, or they may deminiaturize unharmed.
But Benish will die.
Reed leaned toward Carter and shouted, There's nothing to be done about that. Nothing. Benish is dead. Do you want to take a chance on killing 5 more uselessly? Carter seemed to shrink within himself. He said,
Give the order.
Reed went to the transmitter. Remove the Proteus, he said quietly, then went on to the window overlooking the operating room. Michaels was only semi-conscious at best when the Proteus came to rest in the dendrites. The sudden veering that had come after the bright flash of the laser, it must have been a laser, had thrown him against the panel with great force. The only sensation he had from his right arm now was one of frightful pain. It had to be broken. A section of the wall had been fused, and the gap was closed off only by the surface tension of the plasma. The air he had left would last him for the minute or two that would remain before deminiaturization. Already, even as he watched, it seemed to his dizzying senses that the dendrite cables had narrowed a bit. They couldn't really be shrinking, so he had to be expanding. Very slowly, just at first. At full size, his arm could be taken care of. The others would be killed by white cells and be done with. He would say something that would explain the broken ship. And in any case, Benish would be dead and indefinite miniaturization would die with him. There would be peace. Peace. He watched the dendrites while his body remained limply draped over the control panel. Could he move? Was he paralyzed? Was his back broken as well as his arm? Dully, he considered the possibility. He felt his sense of comprehension and awareness slipping away as the dendrites became clouded over with a milky haze. Milky haze? A white cell. Of course it was a white cell. The ship was larger than the individuals out in the plasma, and it was the ship that was at the site of damage. The ship would be the first to attract the attention of the white cell. The window of the Proteus was coated with sparkling milk. Milk invaded the plasma at the break in the ship's hull in the rear and struggled to break through the surface tension barrier. The next to the last sound Michaels heard was the hull of the Proteus, fragile in its makeup of miniaturized atoms, strained to the breaking point with what it had already been through, cracking and splintering under the assault of the white cell. The last sound he heard was his own laughter. Chapter 18. Cora saw the white cell at almost the time Michaels did. Look! She cried in horror. They stopped, turned to look back. The white cell was tremendous. It was 5 times as large in diameter as the Proteus, perhaps larger. Compared to the individuals watching, it was a mountain of milky, skinless, pulsing protoplasm. Its large, lobed nucleus, a milky shadow within its substance, seemed to be a malevolent, irregular eye, and the shape of the whole creature altered and changed with every moment. A portion bulged toward the Proteus. Grant started toward the Proteus almost as though by reflex action. Cora seized his arm. What are you going to do, Grant? Duval said excitedly, There's no way to save him. You'll be throwing away your life. Grant shook his head violently.
It's not he I'm thinking of. It's the ship.
Owen said sadly,
You can't save the ship either.
But we might be able to get it out, where it can expand safely. Listen, even if it is crushed by the white cell, even if it is separated into atoms, each miniaturized atom will deminiaturize. It is deminiaturizing right now. It doesn't matter whether Benish is killed by an intact ship or by a pile of splinters.
Cora said, "You can't get the ship out. Oh, Grant, don't die. Not after all this, please."
Grant smiled at her. "Believe me, I have every reason not to die, Cora. You three keep on going. Let me make just one cottage try."
He swam back, heart beating in almost unbearable revulsion at the monster he was approaching. There were others behind it, farther off, but he wanted this one, the one that was engulfing the Proteus, only this one. At closer quarters, he could see its surface. A portion in profile showed clear, but within were granules and vacuoles. An intricate mechanism, too intricate for biologists to understand in detail even yet, and all crammed into a single microscopic blob of living matter. The Proteus was entirely within it now, a splintering dark shadow encased in a vacuole. Grant had thought that for a moment he had seen Michael's face in the bubble, but that might have been only imagination. Grant was at the heaving, mountainous surface now, but how was he to attract the attention of such a thing? It had neither eyes nor sense, neither a mind nor purpose. It was an automatic machine of protoplasm, designed to respond in certain fashion to injury. How? Grant didn't know. Yet a white cell could tell when a bacterium was in its vicinity. In some cellular way, it knew. It had known when the Proteus was near it, and it had reacted by engulfing it. Grant was far smaller than the Proteus, far smaller than a bacterium, even now. Was he large enough to be noticed? He had his knife out and sank it deeply into the material before him, slitting it downward. Nothing happened. No gush of blood, for there is no blood in a white cell. Then, slowly, a bulging of the inner protoplasm appeared at the site of the ruptured membrane, and that portion of the membrane drew away. Grant struck again. He didn't want to kill it. He didn't think he could at his present size. But was there some way of attracting its attention? He drifted off and, with mounting excitement, noticed a bulge in the wall, a bulge pointing toward him. He drifted further away and the bulge followed. He had been noticed. The manner of the noticing he could not say, but the white cell with everything it contained, with the Proteus, was following. He moved away faster now. The white cell followed, but Grant hoped fervently, not quickly. Grant had reasoned that it was not designed for speed, that it moved like an amoeba, bulging out a portion of its substance and then pouring itself into the bulge. Under ordinary conditions, it fought with immobile objects, with bacteria or with foreign inanimate detritus. Its amoeboid motion was fast enough for that. Now it would have to deal with an object capable of darting away. Darting away quickly enough, Grant hoped. With gathering speed, he swam toward the others, who were still delaying, still watching for him. He gasped, "Get a move on. I think it's following."
"So are others," said Duval grimly.
Grant looked about. The distance was swarming with white cells. What one had noticed, all had noticed. "How?" Duval said.
"I saw you strike at the white cell. If you damaged it, chemicals were released into the bloodstream. Chemicals that attracted white cells from all the neighboring regions."
"Then for God's sake, swim."
The surgical team was gathered around Benish's head, while Carter and Reed watched from above. Carter's mood of black depression was deepening by the moment. It was over. All for nothing. All for nothing. All for...
"General Carter, sir!"
The sound was urgent, strident. The man's voice was cracking with excitement.
"Yes?" "The Proteus, sir. It's moving."
Carter yelled, "Stop surgery!" Each member of the surgical team looked up in startled wonder. Reed plucked at Carter's sleeve. "The motion may be the mere effect of the ship's slowly accelerating deminiaturization. If you don't get them now, they will be in danger of the white cells."
"What kind of motion?"
shouted Carter.
"Where is it heading?"
"Along the optic nerve, sir."
Carter turned fiercely on Reed.
"Where does that go? What does it mean?"
Reed's face lit up.
"It means an emergency exit I hadn't thought of. They're heading for the eye and out through the lacrimal duct. They may make it.
They might just get away with it, damaging one eye at most. Get a microscope slide, someone. Carter, let's get down there."
The optic nerve was a bundle of fibers, each like a string of sausages. Duval paused to place his hand on the junction between two of the sausages.
"A node of Ranvier," he said wonderingly. "I'm touching it." "Don't keep on touching it," gasped Grant. "Keep on swimming."
The white cells had to negotiate the close-packed network and did it less easily than the swimmers could. They had squeezed out into the interstitial fluid and were bulging through the spaces between the nerve fibers. Grant watched anxiously to make sure that the white cell was still in pursuit, the one with the proteus in it. He could not make out the proteus any longer. If it existed in the white cell nearest, it had been transferred so deep into its substance that it was no longer visible. If the white cell behind was not the white cell, then Benish might be killed despite everything. The nerve sparked wherever the beam from the helmet light struck, and the sparkles moved backward in rapid progression.
Light impulses, muttered Duval. Benish's eyes aren't entirely closed.
Owen said,
everything's definitely getting smaller. Do you notice that?
Grant nodded. I sure do. The white cell was only half the monster it had been only moments before, if that.
We only have seconds to go, said Duval.
Cora said, I can't keep up. Grant veered toward her.
Sure you can. We're in the eye now. We're only the width of a teardrop from safety.
He put his arm around her waist, pushing her forward, then took the laser and power unit from her. Duval said,
through here and we'll be in the lacrimal duct.
They were large enough almost to fill the interstitial space through which they were swimming. As they grew, their speed had increased, and the white cells grew less fearsome. Duval kicked open the membranous wall he had come up against.
Get through, he said. Miss Peterson, you first.
Grant pushed her through and followed her. Then Owens and finally Duval.
We're out, said Duval with a controlled excitement. We're out of the body.
Wait, said Grant. I want that white cell out, too. Otherwise... He waited a moment, then let out a shout of excitement.
There it is, and by heaven it's the right one.
The white cell oozed through the opening that Duval's boot had made, but with difficulty. The proteus, or the shattered splinters of it, could be seen clearly through its substance. It had expanded until it was nearly half the size of the white cell, and the poor monster was finding itself with an unexpected attack of indigestion. It struggled on gamely, however. Once it had been stimulated to follow, it could do nothing else. The three men and a woman drifted upward in a well of rising fluid. The white cell, barely moving, drifted up with them. The smooth, curved wall at one side was transparent. It was transparent not in the fashion of a thin capillary wall, but truly transparent. There were no signs of cell membranes or of nuclei.
Duval said, "This is the cornea. The other wall is the lower eyelid. We've got to get far enough away to deminiaturize fully without hurting Benish, and we only have seconds to do it in."
Up above, many feet above, on their still tiny scale, was a horizontal crack.
"Through there," said Duval. "The ship's on the surface of the eye," came the triumphant shout.
"All right," said Reed. "Right eye." A technician leaned closer with a microscope slide at Benish's closed eye. A magnifying lens was in place. Slowly, with a felted clamp, the lower eyelid was gently pinched and pulled down.
"It's there," said the technician in hushed tones. "Like a speck of dirt."
Skillfully, he placed the slide to the eye, and a teardrop with a speck in it squeezed onto it. Everyone backed away. Reed said,
"Something that is large enough to see is going to get much larger very quickly. Scatter!"
The technician, torn between hurry and the necessity for gentleness, placed the slide down on the floor of the room, then backed away at a quick trot. The nurses wheeled the operating table quickly through the large double door, and with a startlingly accelerated speed, the specks on the slide grew to full size. Three men, a woman, and a heap of metal fragments, rounded and eroded, were there, where none had been a moment before. Reed muttered,
8 seconds to spare. But Carter said, "Where's Michaels? If Michaels is still in Benish..."
He started after the vanished operating table with a consciousness of defeat once again filling him. Grant pulled off his helmet and waved him back.
"It's all right, General. That's what's left of the proteus, and somewhere in it you'll find whatever's left of Michaels. Maybe just an organic jelly with some fragments of bones."
Grant still hadn't grown used to the world as it was. He had slept with a few breaks for 15 hours, and he woke in wonder at a world of light and space. He had breakfast in bed with Carter and Reed at his bedside, smiling. Grant said,
"Are the rest getting this treatment, too?"
Carter said,
"Everything that money can buy. For a while, anyway."
Owens is the only one we've let go. He wanted to be with his wife and kids, and we turned him loose, but only after he gave us a quick description of what happened. Apparently, Grant, the mission's success was more to your credit than to anyone's.
If you want to go by a few items, maybe, said Grant. If you want to recommend me for a medal and a promotion, I'll accept. If you want to recommend me for a year's vacation with pay, I'll accept them even more quickly. Actually, though, the mission would have been a failure without any one of us. Even Michaels guided us sufficiently enough, for the most part.
Michaels, said Carter thoughtfully. That bit about him, you know, isn't for publication. The official story is that he died in the line of duty. It wouldn't do any good to have it known that a traitor had infiltrated the CMDF. And I don't know that he was a traitor at that.
Reed said, I knew him well enough to be able to say that he wasn't. Not in the usual sense of the word.
Grant nodded. I agree. He wasn't a storybook villain. He took time to put a swimsuit on Owens before pushing him out of the ship. He was content to have the white cells kill him, but he couldn't do the job himself. No, I think he really wanted to keep indefinite miniaturization a secret for, as he saw it, the good of humanity. Reed said, he was all for peaceful uses of miniaturization. So am I. But what good would it do to... Carter interrupted. You're dealing with a mind that grew irrational under pressure. Look, we've had this sort of thing since the invention of the atomic bomb. There are always people who think that if some new discovery with frightful implications is suppressed, all will be well. Except that you can't suppress a discovery whose time has come. If Benish had died, indefinite miniaturization would still have been discovered next year, or 5 years from now, or 10. Only then they might have had it first.
And now we will have it first, said Grant. And what do we do with it? End in the final war? Maybe Michaels was right.
Carter said dryly, and maybe the common sense of humanity will prevail on both sides. It has so far.
Reed said, especially since once this story gets out and the news media spread the tale of the fantastic voyage of the Proteus, the peaceful uses of miniaturization will be dramatized to the point where we can all fight military domination of the technique, and perhaps successfully.
Carter, taking out a cigar, looked grim and did not answer directly. He said, tell me, Grant, how did you catch on to Michaels?
I didn't, really, said Grant. It was all the result of a confused mass of thinking. In the first place, General, you put me on board ship because you suspected Duval.
Oh, now, wait.
Everyone on the ship knew you had done so, except Duval, perhaps. That gave me a head start, in the wrong direction. However, you were clearly not sure of your ground, for you didn't warn me of anything, so I wasn't inclined to go off half-cocked myself. Those were high-powered people on board ship, and I knew if I grabbed someone and turned out to be mistaken, you would back off and let me take the rap.
Reed smiled gently, and Carter flushed and grew very interested in his cigar.
Grant said, no hard feelings, of course. It's part of my job to take the rap, but only if I have to. So I waited until I was sure, and I was never really sure. We were plagued with a series of accidents, or what might possibly have been accidents. For instance, the laser was damaged, and there was the chance that Miss Peterson had damaged it. But why in so clumsy a fashion? She knew a dozen ways of gimmicking the laser so that it would seem perfectly all right and yet not work properly. She could have arranged it so that Duval's aim would be off just enough to make it inevitable that he kill the nerve, or perhaps even Benish. A crudely damaged laser was either an accident, then, or the deliberate work of someone other than Miss Peterson. Then, too, my lifeline came loose in the lungs, and I nearly died as a result. Duval was the logical suspect there, but it was he who suggested that the ship's headlight be shown into the gap, and that saved me. Why try to kill me and then act to save me? It doesn't make sense. Either that was an accident, too, or my lifeline had been loosened by someone other than Duval. We lost our air supply, and Owens might have arranged that little disaster. But then when we pulled in more air, Owens improvised an air miniaturization device that seemed to do miracles. He could easily not have done so, and no one of us would have been able to accuse him of sabotage. Why bother to lose our air and then work like the devil to gain it back? Either that was an accident, too, or the air supply had been sabotaged by someone other than Owens.
I could omit myself from consideration, since I knew that I wasn't engaged in sabotage. That left Michaels.
Carter said, "You reasoned that he had been responsible for all those accidents."
No, they might still have been accidents. We'll never know. But if it were sabotage, then Michaels was far and away the most likely candidate, for he was the only one who was not involved in a last-minute rescue, or who might be expected to have performed a more subtle piece of sabotage. So now, let's consider Michaels. The first accident was the encounter with the arteriovenous fistula. Either that was an honest misfortune, or Michaels had guided us into it deliberately. If this was sabotage, then, unlike all the other cases, only one culprit was conceivable. Only one. Michaels. I said as much to Michaels himself at one point. Only he could possibly have guided us into it. Only he could possibly know Benish's circulatory system well enough to spot a microscopic fistula. And it was he who directed the exact spot of insertion into the artery in the first place. Reed said, "It might still have been a misfortune, an honest error."
True.
But whereas in all the other accidents, those who were involved as possible suspects did their best to pull us through, Michaels, after we had emerged into the venous system, argued hard for immediate abandonment of the mission. He did the same at every other crisis. He was the only one to do so consistently. And yet, that wasn't the real giveaway, as far as I was concerned.
Well, then, what was the giveaway? Asked Carter.
When the mission first started, and we were miniaturized and inserted into the carotid artery, I was scared. We were all a little uneasy, to say the least. But Michaels was the most frightened of all. He was almost paralyzed with fear. I accepted that at the time. I saw no disgrace in it. As I said, I was pretty frightened myself, and in fact, I was glad of the company. But after we had gotten through the arteriovenous fistula, Michaels never showed any trace of fear again. At times, when the rest of us were nervous, he was not. He had become a rock. In fact, at the start, he had given me plenty of statements on what a coward he was, to explain his obvious fear. But toward the end of the voyage, he was offended almost to frenzy when Duval implied he was a coward. That change in attitude got to seeming queerer and queerer to me. It seemed to me there had to be a special reason for his initial fear. As long as he faced dangers with the rest of us, he was a brave man. Perhaps then it was when he faced a danger the rest of us did not share that he was afraid. The inability to share the risk, the necessity to face death alone, was what turned him coward. At the start, after all, the rest of us were frightened of the mere act of being miniaturized. But that was carried through safely. After that, we all expected to move toward the clot, operate on it, and get out, taking 10 minutes perhaps all told. But Michaels must have been the only one of us who knew this was not going to happen. He alone must have known there would be trouble and that we were about to rumble into a whirlpool. Owens had spoken about the ship's fragility at the briefing, and Michaels must have expected death. He alone must have expected death. No wonder he nearly broke down. When we got through the fistula in one piece, he was almost delirious with relief. After that, he felt certain that we would not be able to complete the mission, and he relaxed. With each successful surmounting of some crisis, he grew angrier. He had no more room for fear, only for anger. By the time we were in the ear, I had made up my mind that Michaels, not Duval, was our man. I wouldn't let him badger Duval into trying the laser beforehand. I ordered him away from Miss Peterson when I was trying to get her away from the antibodies. But then, in the end, I made a mistake. I didn't stay with him during the actual operation, and that gave him his chance to seize the ship. There was this last little shred of doubt in my mind.
That perhaps it was Duval, after all, said Carter.
I'm afraid so. So, I went out to watch the operation when I could have done nothing about it, even if Duval were a traitor. If it hadn't been for that final piece of stupidity, I might have brought the ship back intact, and Michaels alive.
Well, Carter got to his feet. It was cheap at the price. Benish is alive and slowly recovering. I'm not sure that Owens thinks so, though. He's in mourning for his ship.
I don't blame him, said Grant. It was a sweet vessel.
Listen, where's Miss Peterson, do you know?
Reed said, up and around. She had more stamina than you had, apparently. I mean, is she here at the CMDF anywhere?
Yes, in Duval's office, I imagine.
Oh, said Grant, suddenly deflated. Well, I'll wash and shave and get out of here.
Cora put the papers together.
Well then, Dr. Duval, if the report can wait over the weekend, I would appreciate the time off.
Yes, certainly, said Duval. I think we could all use some time off. How do you feel?
I seem to be all right.
It's been an experience, hasn't it?
Cora smiled and walked toward the door. The corner of Grant's head pushed past it.
Miss Peterson.
Cora started violently, recognized Grant, and came running to him, smiling. It was Cora in the bloodstream.
Is it still Cora?
Of course. It always will be, I hope.
Grant hesitated. You might call me Charles. You might even get to the point someday where you can call me good old Charlie.
I'll try, Charles.
When do you quit work?
I've just quit for the weekend.
Grant thought a while, rubbed his clean-shaven chin, then nodded toward Duval, who was bent over his desk. Are you all tied up with him?
He asked at last. Cora said gravely, I admire his work. He admires my work. And she shrugged.
Grant said, May I admire you?
She hesitated, then smiled a little. Anytime you want to. As long as you want to. If I can admire you occasionally, too.
Let me know when, and I'll strike a pose.
They laughed together. Duval looked up, saw them in the doorway, smiled faintly, and waved something that might have been either a greeting or a farewell. Cora said, I want to change into street clothes, and then I would like to see Benish. Is that all right?
Will they allow visitors?
Cora shook her head. No. But we're special.
Benish's eyes were open. He tried to smile. A nurse whispered anxiously,
Only a minute now. He doesn't know what's happened, so don't say anything about it.
I understand, said Grant.
To Benish, in a low voice, he said,
How are you?
Benish tried again to smile.
I'm not sure. Very tired. I have a headache and my right eye hurts, but I seem to have survived.
Good.
It takes more than a knock on the head to kill a scientist, said Benish. All that mathematics makes the skull as hard as a rock, eh?
We're all glad of that, said Cora gently.
Now I must remember what I came here to tell. It's a little hazy, but it's coming back. It's all in me, all of it.
And now he did smile. And Grant said, You'd be surprised at what's in you, Professor.
The nurse ushered them out, and Grant and Cora left, hand in warm hand, into a world that suddenly seemed to hold no terrors for them, but only the prospect of great joy.
End of Fantastic Voyage by Isaac Asimov.